Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
We had a really good day today at practice. I saw very competitive periods on both sides. Like, we had a tough physical short yardage period today, and it was a lot of back and forth. Guys did a great job up front, D-line, O-line. Those guys were competing and battling. That's what you see every day. Our receivers and DBs, those guys competing. Receivers making plays, DBs making plays on the football. We have a really competitive team. That's my takeaway from our camp thus far, and that's how it should be. So I'm excited just to see these guys go play against someone else. It is that time of camp where it's going to be a little more chirpy. You're going to see fights and scuffles happening, but it's just you get tired of hitting the same person. You get tired of going against the same schemes over and over again. So it's that time for us to go play a game.
Yeah, it was chippy yesterday. It was good. Day three here today, Texans training camp live at the Greenbrier, and we are literally live at the Greenbrier Sports Performance Center this morning. Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne, we're sitting on the 25-yard line right next to the practice field, underneath the tent. This is how it's supposed to feel. The Airbnb studio was nice. It worked great. It served its purpose. But now we're out here. We got the lawnmowers going.
Yeah.
We got the few stragglers, you know, like not stragglers, but a few early risers coming out here and doing some things.
Yeah, certainly not stragglers. Yeah. It's mostly coaches and others that are out getting their workout in.
Yeah.
I judge them for it.
They're running barefoot over there in the grass.
That's the big thing these days.
That looks delightful.
Sean. Proprioception.
Yeah,
and all
Matt
that.
Collins.
Yes, this is all true. We can see the fog filling the valley off in the distance.
Yeah.
We have a lightly traveled interstate to our left. But no toaster. I don't have a toaster the way I had back at the Airbnb.
That is true. Bring your own bagels, baby.
It's been a competitive camp. Obviously, anybody that's been paying attention the last couple weeks knows that the defense has largely been getting better than the offense. The offense has showed progress in fits and starts. I think yesterday the biggest promising sign was that you saw movement by the offensive line in the run game. There was some physicality there that showed up. And lo and behold, when Nick Chubb can see good blocking in front of him, he's still got a little something in him. You know, Nick coming off of that really, really bad knee injury from a couple seasons ago. It's going to be an ongoing process, and we really won't know until we see him in live action just maybe where he is. But you want to see him do it in an environment where he's got good blocking in front of him. This Texans offensive line, if they can improve in one area right now from last year, that I think is going to be a real thing. I think it's the physicality and getting push in the run game. I think they're better suited to that.
They're definitely better this time this year than they were this time last year, for sure. It was a disaster at training camp last year. Haven't been great this year.
Yeah.
But we're kind of grading on a curve because they're putting in, it's a completely new offensive line. Titus is back at right tackle these last couple practices. That's the only commonality. They're installing a new system. They're going against a really good defense. You guys know all the caveats that go with the Texans' offensive performance here. But let's start there. We'll give you our kind of summary of day two and what we saw out here, your eyes and ears out here at the Greenbrier. And let's start where Seth was just talking about. Nick Chubb had his best day in training camp so far. As of right now, Nick Chubb is a really important component to the 2025 Houston Texans, because we don't know what the situation really is with Joe Mixon, other than he's going to be out probably for training camp and they're going to reevaluate him before week one. And everybody behind Nick Chubb is either injured. You know, Damian Pierce came back to practice yesterday, but really just working out on the side, and inexperienced. Woody Marks, Jawar Jordan, J.J. Taylor's been around a while, but if I had to guess, he's not going to really factor in when everybody's healthy again.
Yeah, and then, Ogunbowale, Brooks. British Brooks can play both fullback and running back. And then so much of this, and it's the hardest part to evaluate, is the special teams aspect of it.
Yeah.
Because when you're talking about guys running down on punt team, running down on kickoff, being on punt return and kickoff return, there's a lot to sort through that the coaches and Frank Ross obviously are going to be weighing heavily in the decision, but we're relatively blind to that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. So Nick Chubb had his best day yesterday, highlighted by, I think, what would have been about a 25 or 30 yard run in a regular game. In practice here, they blow the whistle and they stop when the guy gets in the clear. But Chubb had some other good runs, too. Had a little bit of wiggle in the hole. It wasn't bad. Here was D'Amico Ryans after practice yesterday. First question right out of the shoot was about Nick Chubb.
Nick has been consistent. He's done a really good job. Like I said, I see a very physical runner. When he has the football in his hands, he does a really nice job in protection schemes of staying square, picking up the blitzes from the defenders. He's just overall all around solid, consistent. He's gotten better every day that he's been here.
One of the first elements that a football player needs to have, and this never really makes it to the motivational posters or anything, but it's really just, don't bleep up my drill, man. Don't bleep up my play call. Don't screw up whatever I'm trying to run on this play. Yeah. First do no harm. There's a Hippocratic oath of making a football team, mm-hmm. and it's at first do no harm. And that is where the advantage of having a veteran running back at times is. It's in the pass protection. It's in running the play that's executed. I think that, or that's called, and executing it properly. I think if there's a difference between Chubb and Mixon, if you take both of them at their prime, I think Chubb is a little bit less of a freelancer. And that can be an asset. Mixon, he'll kind of bounce it outside sometimes where he should be hitting it upfield, and it's not a huge deal because he's really good at it. Chubb's more of a just hit the hole and go and create a bunch of mayhem afterwards. So I like that complement of those two. And I think when it comes to if he can be 80 or 90% of what he was at his peak, he's a guy that can consistently churn out positive yardage. And he can be an asset in pass protection. He can do all those things that might not be peak Nick Chubb, but are still really valuable to a team if you want a consistent offense.
D'Amico's not afraid to pay really high compliments to people when they look really, really good out here. I think he's very forthright and honest. He's never going to throw a player under the bus and say they're bad. He'll find some way to maneuver around that. I felt like with Chubb right there, he wasn't describing somebody who's really, like, popped out here at camp, like, wow.
Yeah.
But it's like if you were describing an automobile, and D'Amico, if you were describing, like, Derek Stingley or Will Anderson, he's describing a Lamborghini. And with Chubb, he was describing, like, a Toyota Camry. You know, it's going to get you to where you want to go. It's reliable. You can get plenty of miles on it.
Well, and he and
it'll
he
get
said,
you 5 yards on first and 10.
He said it earlier in camp. He basically conceded that Chubb right now isn't the guy he was when he was just an absolute monster. And it's not saying that he can't get back to that place. But you got to live in where we are now and what he is right now, and can he contribute. Yesterday, and again, it's all predicated on, is there actually good blocking in front of him? You saw some examples of actually good blocking, not just on his long run, but on some of the inside runs. That's where I was more encouraged, because those interior offensive linemen are very much in flux and big question marks right now about who's going to start, other than Lakin Tomlinson at left guard. If they can get push like that, if they can get movement, then you can be an offense that's not routinely stuck in the mud and if you try to run the ball on first down.
So it's good seeing Chubb do some things yesterday, and that run game is going to be really important. Let's skip over to the defense. Ben, let's skip down to Kamari Lassiter here, because we've got to get the props in for Kamari Lassiter, who was he was the best player on the field yesterday. And during this camp, he might be the best defensive player not named Will Anderson. Will Anderson's been the star of this camp, in my opinion. But Kamari Lassiter was excellent yesterday. Had an early interception. The very next play after that Nick Chubb run that we were describing, the very next play, C.J. Stroud took a deep shot to Nico Collins, and Kamari Lassiter basically kind of ran the route for him. Like, it looked like the pass was intended for Kamari Lassiter. Great hands, came down with it. Later in team drills, CJ was trying to find Xavier Hutchinson on a pass, kind of, you know, linebacker level, about 8 yards in front of the line of scrimmage. Kamari Lassiter comes in, physical, bumped, like, legal play, tips the ball, ball goes up in the air, intercepts it, probably would have been a pick six. Another play, stride for stride with Nico Collins later in practice, almost a carbon copy of the interception, except it was a pass breakup, not an interception. Kamari Lassiter was and has been excellent throughout this training camp. Here's D'Amico Ryans on Kamari Lassiter.
Kamari continues to improve just his details. And that's what sticks out about him. Like, a year two player who doesn't feel like a year two player. He's continuing to ascend, continuing to make plays, continue to push himself to be in those tough spots, you know, going against Nico, going against Higgins. Like, those are tough guys to go against, and he battles every single day, and he finds a way to make a play. And I think he made two picks today on the football. So it's impressive to see such a young player who's always dialed in, always bringing great energy and great emotion to our defense, and the guys, they really vibe with that, and he's a spark plug for our team.
The thing about Kamari, it's interesting in camp. We were talking yesterday about who have been the bright spots in camp, and Kamari has very much been one of them. And we don't mention Derek Stingley. I think because Derek Stingley has now entered that phase of his career that you see with good cornerbacks where early in their career, a lot of picks, a lot of PBUs, and then as they become a known quantity and they become true masters of their trade, they don't necessarily see a whole lot of action. Mm-hmm. And Kamari, I think in games this year too, is going to be the guy that quarterbacks are going to test more. And he's probably going to end up making even more plays than he made last year, partly just because people have learned their lesson about Derek Stingley.
That's a great point. I sit here and say Kamari's been the second best player out here to Will Anderson. He's been the second best guy in terms of the amount of plays he's making.
Right.
The chances are Derek Stingley Jr. might be the best player out here, just nobody tests
it's
him
just,
ever.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't
just
see the
got,
ball.
He's got things on lockdown.
Yeah.
So you're not going to go back and look at most great cornerbacks. They've got a slew of interceptions in their first few years, and then they kind of trail off even as they become better players.
Yeah, that's Stingley. In fact, Amico was asked about that after practice, about Kamari. Is Kamari Lassiter prepping for more targets this season because Derek Stingley Jr. had such success last year?
We prepare all of our guys the same. You know, I don't try to go in predicting exactly who they're going to try to attack or what they would do schematically. I just know that I want to have two great guys on the edge of our defense that's up front rushing and also in the pass coverage who can make a play. If you go to any side, we want it to be tough. So is they want to challenge Kamari, great. They want to challenge Stingley, great. We feel good about both of those guys being able to make a play versus any one-on-one matchup.
It's nice to be a head coach and you can honestly say that about your two cornerbacks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, sure, if they want to challenge D'Angelo Ross, great. If they want to challenge Derek Stingley, great.
Well, remember when D'Amico was in San Francisco, it was Lenore who was the cornerback,
yeah.
The kind of the lesser cornerback. And D'Amico, the pep talk he gave him was in the playoffs, hey, this is your opportunity. They're going to test you. This is your opportunity. And I don't know if – I think Kamari played well enough last year that that's not the same situation. The upside of Lassiter is a lot higher than the upside of Lenore, obviously. So, trying to plan for that or scheme for it or anything, that's getting on the verge of trying to be too clever.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to play the game as it comes to you, and you start trying to outsmart everybody on every level. Just go out and play good, fundamentally sound defense. The defense has played well enough, and it's not like last year where the defense was destroying the offense, and it was, you'd find out, okay, the offense was worse than we maybe thought it was.
Yeah.
I mean, this year, because of what the defense did last year and because of some of the known quantities that are struggling on offense, you know, the way that defense has been able to take away Nico Collins a lot, that's where I feel like this defense might really ascend to an extreme level this year.
Yeah.
It reminds me a little bit of back in 2002, 2001, 2001 was the year before the Ravens won the Super Bowl, right?
No, they won in 2000.
They won in 2000. So yeah. 99. I'm thinking in 99, the Ravens had they did some really impressive things defensively. But then 2000, all of a sudden, it just, like, they hit the nitrous,
yeah.
You know? And it just kind of feels like they might be about to hit the nitrous.
And won a Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer as their quarterback.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean?
Which is what I was telling myself yesterday. I'm like, listen, you know, all right, okay, the offense might take some time to gel.
Yeah.
All right? But I know for damn sure that C.J. Stroud is a better quarterback
Thank
than Trent
you.
Dilfer, okay?
Thank
I
admit, you.
I don't – it doesn't have to be a scenario like the 2000 Ravens.
Yep.
It can be a little bit more balanced than that. And as long as – if the defense can be that good, it gives you a little bit of a grace period while the offense figures things out.
No doubt. All right, we're off and running on a Wednesday. We are live, as you can see, on YouTube and Twitch. We're live out here.
We'll be up live on YouTube in a second.
Okay.
If you bear with us, everybody,
okay.
We'll get the camera there as
well. Gotcha, gotcha. Okay, we'll be up live momentarily. We're live at the Greenbrier. Up next, let's circle over to the Astros. They got a win last night, and I do want to – we didn't hit one thing in the open. We got the first of these at Texans training camp. We'll tell you what it was yesterday, coming up next.
He hits one high. He hits one deep. He hits one all the way out and gone. A three-pointer for Yiner Diaz deep into the seats in Miami. And the Astros lead this game 7-1.
That was the swing that we needed there to put kind of the part of the game in a different spot for us. Once he cleared the bases there, we were okay, here we go. But quality at bats, Carlos Correa's at bats there, walking and getting those singles the other way. Altuve, that two run in the first. Those are big, especially when we're trying to kind of piece it together and trying to get some innings out of our guys. So I thought that we play really well.
That was Joe Espada, and we'll circle back to Texans training camp in just a minute, but we should acknowledge the Astros and their win yesterday. I'm going to check the standings right now. We went to bed before.
The fun thing about last night was I'm trying to figure out how I feel about Jesus Sanchez smiling all the time. It's kind of intoxicating. I feel like as soon as he goes into an extended slump, though, yeah. I think I might get tired of it.
Until he starts costing us games. That's when I'll stop liking it.
It got to the point, and then I started to wonder and worry a little bit. You know, Mauricio Dubon almost got murdered by Cam Smith as he waited for a fly ball in center field.
Yeah.
And Cam came flying in and snatched it from in front of him.
I'm like, I thought we were over this. Remember in the early in the season when everybody was almost running into each other?
Now, there was never a danger of a collision because Dubon was set up. Cam Smith appeared out of nowhere right in front of him to the point where Dubon actually had to check his glove to see whether the ball had landed in it or not.
Yeah.
And it was as close to angry as I think I've ever seen Mauricio Dubon. He has like a look of being slightly perturbed, which is his version of rage.
Yeah.
But that was, I don't know. I feel like the happy-go-lucky congenial personality balance has been disrupted a little bit with Jesus Sanchez on the team.
Maybe.
There's just too many nice guys now.
Yeah. He's infected Cam Smith with that kind of spacey attitude that he's got a little bit.
I'm talking about Dubon getting peeved.
Oh, Dubon. Yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe he doesn't have to feel the weight of being the guy who's always happy and positive that Jesus Sanchez is there.
He can offload some of that on Sanchez, yeah. So they get a win last night, 7-3. Altuve had a two-run home run before you could even go get a sandwich. Yainer Diaz, the big blow there that you heard, three-run home run. That was another moment. There's going to be a few of these, Seth, with Carlos Correa back here. We're like, oh, God, this is still kind of weird that Carlos is on this team.
Yeah.
Joe Espada, in that cut that we just played, going, you know, Carlos Correa had a couple good at-bats.
Like,
Joe Espada saying Carlos Correa's name for some reason. Like, okay, it's still a little weird.
And kind of saying it almost like in a way that he might as well have been talking about Bryce Matthews or something.
Yeah,
Carlos, he'll figure things out.
Still a little weird, man. Still a little weird. So that was good last night. You get a win. You got two wins now against a team that was red hot coming into this series. The Marlins had been one of the hottest teams in baseball, and you've taken them to the woodshed back-to-back nights. And last night was a night where you had Okert, who I had no idea had such a bad history as an opener in his career. Mm-hmm. They were hitting that on the broadcast.
Such a bad history that when he was pulled after five outs,
he got an ovation.
And he had like a funny smile out of him, too.
Yeah.
I was all up in my positive feelings last night.
It was good.
Look at these nice, happy guys.
It was good. And Blue Ball came in and gave you three good innings.
Oh, yeah, Blue Ball.
Blue Ball, baby.
Blue Ball came in. They simplified it for him, Sean. Yep. He's got six pitches, and they said, listen, man. Yeah, let's not overcomplicate things.
Yeah.
Let's simplify, whittle it down to three pitches. He's hitting 98 plus on the gun.
Which surprised everybody.
Yeah.
Like, whoa.
I think that's where in you can say, okay, hey, you got a changeup? You got a fastball? There you go, son. There's no book on you yet. Just go out there and just keep it simple.
Three-game lead on the Mariners, four-and-a-half-game lead on the Rangers. So they're kind of keeping these teams at arm's distance.
Yeah.
We get Spencer Arrigetti back today. Excitement level on a scale of 1 to 10 to see Spencer Arrigetti again out there.
1,700.
Really? That much? Okay. I was a 12.
No, honestly, realistically, I'd say like an 8. I'm going to say an 8. I don't want to, you know, I try to adopt a baseball player's mentality.
Yeah.
You know, not a kill, die.
It's a long season.
And, you know, pitchers, they take a little while sometimes to settle their feet and all that. Yeah. But an 8. I'm excited to see him. As some of the replacements start coming in from the rear here, that you might. This has been a strange season in that the surge that they made wasn't as dramatic as last year's surge, and you knew really in the back of your mind that they couldn't sustain that freakishly long stretch they had with the guys they had on the roster. But it still hurt when they started to fall again and when they started to lose a little of the ground they'd gained. But then we knew also that, all right, there's these guys on the IL, and they're theoretically going to come back someday. We had no idea Carlos Correa was going to come back.
No, we did not.
Not a single clue that was going to happen.
For a minor league pitcher.
Yeah, so I'm riding the waves. I'm not keeping an even keel this season. I felt kind of a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know if our listeners feel the same way, but I felt a little bit bipolar this entire season.
Oh, yeah. It's been weird, man. Yeah. It's been totally weird.
So I'm on a manic level right now, though. Yeah. I'm just entering the manic phase.
Good.
Okay.
Can't wait.
You're going to get phone calls from me at 2 a.m.
Oh, it's going to be great.
I'm going to get three chapters in to my autobiography that I'm writing until, which I just started this morning, but that at some point it's going to all crash.
Yeah. And just so you know, when
don't
Seth
let me
says,
burn the autobiography.
When Seth says you're going to get calls at 2 in the morning, he's not just talking to me. He could call any one of you at 2 in the morning.
Because I have them, your number from the text line.
That's right. That is true. We should just pick five random texters.
If somebody annoys me on the text line, I'm going to call them at 2 a.m.
2 in the morning, yeah.
Hey, wake up. We got to talk about this.
Got to talk Strohs. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, hey, we got our first fight yesterday.
Yeah.
We got our first fight.
Was it the first one?
It was, well, we had there was a dust-up in Houston that was not really a fight.
Yeah.
It was just some pushing and shoving. And then we haven't had anything here until Cade Stover, and this is not the fight, though. Cade Stover and C.J. Gardner-Johnson got into a bit of a dust-up yesterday.
Yeah. Cade Stover caught a pass in the flat. Yeah. C.J. Gardner-Johnson gave him a hard contact. It was kind of driving him.
They went to the ground.
Right. But I don't know if they were going to go to the ground, but Cade Stover kind of put C.J. Gardner-Johnson in a headlock.
Okay.
And then they ended up going to the ground. It was a scrum. It got broken up. But then Cade Stover was PO'd and
you like this.
Pointing at the defense as he's going back to the huddle.
Yeah.
And he's got a pretty badass bunch of tattoos on his arm.
Does that true? When you point and you have tattoos, it looks more badass.
Yeah, as long as your arm's not too flabby like mine are these days.
Right.
And he's got a beard this year, too.
Yeah.
He looked like a Grizzly Adams type about to fight a grizzly bear.
So that was good. But that was just, it was a lot of talk, a lot of pointing. And at that point, I turned to Mark Vandermeer, who I was sitting with at practice. I said, well, if we're not going to get a fight out of the farm boy from Ohio and the perpetual line stepper in C.J. Gardner-Johnson, if that's not going to turn into fisticuffs, then nothing is.
Yeah.
And then two plays later, Dalton Schultz and Russ Yeast happened.
Yeah.
And what happened there was Dalton Schultz, something about tight ends and safeties, I guess. Dalton Schultz catches the ball, kind of going to the ground. Yeast kind of launches himself missile style at Dalton Schultz and looked like we're kind of far away from our vantage point, but it looked like he came up above the neck. It looked like he came towards his head. And they both got up, stared at each other. Dalton Schultz took the ball and threw it at Russ Yeast's feet. Russ Yeast clearly said something because there was a long pause where they were looking at each other.
Yeah.
Because he said something and Dalton Schultz just started sprinting. He was sprinting at him like Roman Reigns getting ready to spear a guy, man. It was, and they went to the ground and there was a scuffle. There were arms moving.
Yeah.
That one.
There was fists being thrown.
Fists of fury.
Being thrown at
fists
me.
Of fury.
I didn't, that one I was off to the side and I couldn't see it as well. Yeah. I missed all that one.
Yeah. So
I missed the best thing that's happened in camp this year from the offense.
Yeah.
The
fight. Well, I think they took Dalton out after that.
Yeah.
Like to cool off. And I'm like, no. This might be the shot in the arm that the offense needs. Like, there was a lot of chirping going on.
Get back in there and call 10 straight runs.
Yeah. I wanted that to turn into something football.
You wanted D'Amico to completely lose his composure and all sense of responsible stewardship of this football team.
That would be
unique.
You
wanted seven guys on the IR just so you could prove a point,
Sean. No, I don't want anybody to get hurt. I just wanted it. I wanted the offense to, running like three or four running plays where hopefully that disrespect – that Yeast and C.J. Gardner-Johnson are showing them. And I don't know if it's disrespect, but that's how they should internalize it.
Maybe they'd already had some good inside runs before that, so I'm not going to give it credit there, but I think it's a little bit of a testament to maybe the offense coming out and having a little bit of a chip on their shoulder yesterday.
Yeah.
And just that
they were bad on Monday, man.
Yeah, they were bad. They were bad in a lot of respects. You could see it just in the way they were – their body language after practice, you could see it. I'm guessing – that they got a pretty hard talking to and got challenged by their coaches before that. You know, that you're watching film that night and guys are saying, look, man, you want to put it on film tomorrow?
Yeah.
You want to put that on film tomorrow? And to their credit, I thought the offense came out and played a more physical brand of football the next day.
Christian Harris and Damian Pierce were working out off to the side yesterday. They were in pads. They looked like they were ready to go do stuff. Instead, they did stuff off to the side. Here was D'Amico Ryans when he was asked about the two of them after practice yesterday.
Yeah, Christian and Damon, they're chomping at the bit to get out here. Yeah, I have to hold those guys back because they're ready to go. They want to practice. They want to be out here. And they're definitely making a lot of progress. They're in a really great spot. It's cool to see them out you know, in their pads finally. I know it's great for them. Anytime you're on the side, you're rehabbing, those type of things, just mentally, like, you want to get back out with the guys. And so today was a big day for them to get back out here, go through some of our walkthrough periods, put the pads on. It was a great day for them.
So, I mean, if we're being honest, it was largely the same for them yesterday, just in pads.
Yeah.
You know, they were wearing football uniforms and pads yesterday.
They're easy. I'm guessing at this point it's that they're being very cautious about how they're handling
them. That's what it sounds like, just based on that cut from DeMeco.
Yeah, and like if they could have put, you know, they didn't put Christian Harris on the PUP because, as Nick Caserio said, they just want him to be able to participate in some things. So I think when we've learned this from various Astros injuries and whatnot, when it's a mysterious injury, you kind of almost have to say, all right, we're stepping way back. If this calf injury didn't heal over the course of a couple months last year, we're going to take every ounce of time, and we want you feeling really good for 2 or 3 months before you go back out
there. It might be kind of like what Jordan, hand thing with Jordan. I don't know, man. It's, yeah, this.
I forgot about Jordan.
Yeah. Well, and we forgot about Christian Harris last year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's out of sight, out of mind. Here was DeMeco Ryans. He got asked about each guy individually as well. He's saying Christian Harris has been dialed in.
No, it's not a challenge getting Christian back. It's just a matter of him, like, being in a good spot where he can come out and they'll play well. He's been dialed in. He's been in a ton of meetings, a ton of walkthroughs on the side, even though it hasn't been live, full-speed reps. Coach Davis and Coach Ben Bolin have done a great job of, you know, putting him in positions, getting him mental reps, and he's done a great job of handling that. So when he comes back, it's nothing new to him. It's just a matter of getting back into playing football. So there's no challenge there.
That becomes an interesting room when he comes back.
EJ Speed has done some impressive things. He's been running with the ones at times at practice. So the linebackers with EJ Speed, Christian Harris coming back, Henry Toa, Azeez Al-Shaar. Jamal Hill is intriguing.
I didn't even have him written down.
Well, he's a young guy drafted last year. But Jamal Hill was a guy who was a safety in college, much like Fred Warner was.
Yeah.
And it was very, very raw. Safety, played linebacker, I think, just his final year at Oregon.
Yeah.
And
he's done some things out here,
too. He was very raw. He's very athletic.
Yeah,
you know,
very
he's put
athletic.
Together well.
So you named four names, though, that are, like, Azeez is making the team, obviously. Henry Toa is making the team, obviously.
Yeah.
If Christian Harris is healthy, he's on this team.
Yeah.
EJ Speed, I feel like, is like 85% chance to make the team. He's running with the ones yesterday.
I'd be really, and he's a good special teams player, like, depending on how they use him as a linebacker.
Not a lock those other guys are, but he's close to it. And then, like you say, Jamal Hill, the other two names I had written down, Nick Neiman is a guy they signed who is a special teams ace. And Jake Hansen's a guy who's been on the team for 3 years now, and he's been doing some good things.
And he's another guy, too, that gives you a lot of versatility because he's not necessarily ideal size, but he's very,
very
fast.
They're not all going to make the team.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah, Neiman, at least so far in his career, has been almost exclusively a special teams guy.
Yeah.
So, but they might see upside him as a linebacker. I mean, that's EJ Speed's story.
Yeah.
EJ Speed was just a special teams guy in Indianapolis his first few years, ended up becoming a starting linebacker for him. So they might think that Neiman has that potential as well.
Here was DeMeco on Damian Pierce and how he's been doing.
Yeah, Damian has played a lot of good football in his career. He's rushed for over 1,000 yards. He's made, you know, those home run plays. He's done it as the kick returner. So he's just a well-rounded player who is not new for him. The game isn't too big for him. And when the lights are on, Damian, we know he can go out and perform well. So whenever that time comes for him to get back out there, it's just exciting. Be exciting to see him out there.
Okay, and similarly, with the running back room, we know Joe Mixon's making the team. It appears as Nick Chubb is on track to make the team. He's running with the ones, and he ran well yesterday, and he's Nick Chubb. Dario Gumbawale is sort of a wild card because of how they view him as a special teams guy. He gets third down reps with the ones. He's their third down back right now. I think ultimately that's going to be Woody Parks, who also is making the team. You drop Damian in there now, and then you got these other guys who've been, you know, Juwan Jordan's done some good things in camp. I don't think J.J. Taylor's making the team. He's done some good things.
Other thing you got to keep in mind with Damian as well is that he's been injured a lot. You know, he's had
– Every year.
Yeah. And how much do you use that when you're planning and building out your team? I do get a little bit nervous if they feel like, okay, Nick Chubb's at a point where we can rely on him to do at least a certain amount at the beginning of the year. But Joe Mixon's coming off of injury. You're still not 100% certain exactly what Nick Chubb's health is going to be like or where he is in terms of getting back to his peak or how much he can handle.
Mm-hmm.
Damian Pierce's injury history gets me a little bit nervous. But I guess the flip side of that is I do think that between Jawar Jordan and Woody Marks, and not to mention just British Brooks and just other guys that are potential options. They will have options. It's not your ideal option, obviously, but if your top two running backs are out, nobody's got ideal options.
That's correct. All right, we are live at the Greenbrier, just outside the Sports Performance Center, sitting at the 25-yard line of the Texans practice field, and we've got you covered here all day long on Sports Radio 610, so keep it tuned here. Seth and I will be bumping on with the other shows again today, as we've been doing throughout the week. 1240 today within the loop. We switched it to 520 today with the drive. They've got Robert Flores coming on at 340, and then 740 with Area 45. So keep it tuned. We are your eyes and ears here at Texans training camp. Up next, headlines. We will dive deeper into practice yesterday with the Texans here at training camp. Also, the Astros win. We'll circle back to that. The NFL was busy spending money yesterday. Not the NFL, sorry, ESPN. ESPN was busy making deals yesterday with the NFL and with another entity that 10 years ago you would have said, these guys are partnering up. We'll tell you who that is in headlines. We'll do that coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, it is today's headlines. What's so funny, Seth?
So we're out here at the Greenbrier. Yeah. It's just right next to the field. It's beautiful. The weather is awesome. Our view is incredible, but I just realized that for our viewers, what they see behind us is a power transformer,
yeah,
a shed.
Trust us,
I was thinking we should turn the camera around, but the team would probably frown on that.
The guys running behind us.
But we could do it. We could do it until the guys show up for practice.
We could.
We'll do that in the next segment.
Okay. Yeah. We want to turn around and do the show from that side?
Yeah, and then at some point, Brent, the security head, is going to come around and come
smash your laptop on the ground.
Yeah, he's going to demand that I delete my hard drive.
Grab your laptop and break it in half with his bare hands. Yeah. If you're looking behind us on the YouTube, there's a chain link fence behind us. And Seth, before the show, why were you running around inside that fenced-in area right there?
Well, I was because I don't want to, honestly, when you're out here this early in the morning, the security guys they're kind of, you know, keeping an eye on things for what is and is not normal.
Right.
And I didn't want to, like, stray off into some area where a security guy was going to have to come get me.
Yeah.
So I was just getting my steps in by pacing around the jail yard right there.
It was funny because you're inside a chain link fence. I'm sitting there doing a selfie video of teasing the show, and I'm looking behind me. I'm like, oh, there's Seth inside a steel cage in there getting ready for the show.
It looked like I had my 1 hour alone in the yard.
Yes.
You know, that I was in solitary, and I get 1 hour by myself in the yard.
Just walking in circles. Yeah. It was great.
Should have done some push-ups.
So we're here day three of the trip here to the Greenbrier. Day 12, I believe, of training camp. We finally get a game on Saturday against the Vikings. That'll be fun. Offense, better day yesterday. Hoping they can build on that today out here. The Texans released their first depth chart yesterday, Seth. That's always a fun that's always a fun day for the media. I don't know that there's something in the NFL – and this is saying something. I don't know if there's something where there's a bigger chasm of relevance and importance between media and the coaching / front office people than the first depth chart of the preseason.
So this is the thing that the fans need to know about that depth chart. D'Amico Ryans learned of the existence of that depth chart that's put out by the media department
from the media
only a couple hours before you, the fan, did.
Yeah.
And basically, either metaphorically or literally, just tears it up and throws it on the ground.
Threw it in Omar's face.
So it's probably fun for the media department because they're kind of guessing at it the same way we as fans would.
Okay. How well do you think they guessed at these things based on what we've seen so far here at training camp? Jarrett Patterson is listed as the number one center.
I don't think it's impossible, but as of right now, based on how the reps have been doled out,
it's inaccurate.
Jake Andrews has been the starter most of the time.
100%, yeah. And all the time of late.
Yeah.
Ariante Ursary is listed at right tackle right now. My guess is this may have gone to the printers before Cam Robinson got hurt.
Right.
Or his injury just isn't anything that's serious.
It's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
And I'm
Cam's
guessing,
listed as the left tackle.
I'm guessing that it's still Cam Robinson if they started today. I don't think Cam Robinson has looked – no, I wasn't here when Cam Robinson was still healthy, but just from talking to people, it's not like Cam Robinson has been blowing people away with his performance or anything.
No.
So that might be more of a competitive situation. It would be if Blake Fisher were playing well at all, but he's not, because then you might want Blake Fisher at right tackle and Ursary at left. I still think I still think it's likely that at the beginning of the season, it's Tytus Howard at right guard, Ursary at right tackle, and Cam Robinson at left tackle.
Yeah, if Cam gets healthy again, I could see them going back to that. I'm not going to run the truth filter on all this stuff. Just know that Jaden Higgins is listed as a starter as in a three wide receiver depth chart. That kind of matches what we've been seeing. He's been running a lot with the twos also, which would make sense. Nico Collins and Christian Kirk are easily your top two guys right now. But Jaden Higgins had a hell of a practice yesterday.
He did, to go along with a hell of a practice by Davis Mills.
Correct.
Davis Mills has done some really nice things. And that with Davis, I think the question is always, all right, there's the practice version of Davis Mills, and then there's the game version of Davis Mills. And can he operate the same way in the game with the fluidity and the confidence and all of that? But he's turning into that guy without having had to be on a bunch of different teams, because he's been with so many different offensive coordinators. Some of those backup quarterbacks become really valuable just because they can pick up a scheme really quickly.
Yeah.
They've been in multiple concepts. You can trade for him mid-season, and you know that he's going to be able to pick up your system. He's like, you know, he's obviously a Stanford guy, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But he's had some really nice throws. Couple to Jaden Higgins, one to Xavier Hutchinson.
One to Jalen Knoll, too, yesterday.
Yeah,
he was really good.
So of those two rookie receivers, Jaden Higgins has probably spent more time with the ones with Jalen Knoll, which makes sense because Christian Kirk's going to be your starting slot receiver.
Yep.
It's not like Jalen Knoll hasn't looked good. It's just that the depth chart shakes out differently.
It's fun, though, man. I'm sure they've got some plays in that playbook that have four wide receivers out there, empty with four wideouts out there.
Yeah, no, I think Jalen Knoll is going to get reps during the regular season, but not going to be listed as a starter.
Let's do the run and shoot. Screw it. Let's just crumple it up. CJ out there, empty, and you got Jalen Knoll and Christian Kirk in the slots, and Jaden Higgins and Nico Collins on the outside.
That's like giving, you might as well give a loaded revolver to your toddler, Sean.
Let's go.
This is a bad.
That was wrong when I gave Sammy a loaded revolver.
That's a bad idea.
Okay.
This is
all right.
They're not
just spitball.
They're not in a position yet. They made a little bit of progress yesterday, Sean.
They're not ready
to have five offensive linemen out there with CJ naked in the backfield. Naked and afraid.
They're dead.
Yeah. They should send CJ out there without a helmet on.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Reckless. You're wantonly reckless.
I know. I'm just spitballing. The Astros win yesterday 7-3. This got us off to a nice start here.
This ball hit well to left field. Back goes Stowers to the wall, looking up. It's gone. Into the Marlins bullpen. Jose Altuve, number 19, tying Isak Paredes for the team lead, and it's 2-0 Strohs.
Yeah, man, Altuve is going to wind up leading this team in home runs this year because everybody else who hits him gets hurt.
Yeah.
So Altuve, that was before. I went for a walk yesterday at the end of the day. I said, I'll be back in time for the start of the Astros game. I get back 5 minutes late. It's 2-0 already. Mm-hmm. That was nice.
Yiner hits a three-run homer.
Yep.
A majestic three-run homer. Christian Walker. Both Yiner and Christian Walker in this last month have really shown more of their good version of themselves.
Definitely.
Yiner's got about a 1,000 OPS over the last 14 days.
Yep.
The month of July, he had an 800-plus OPS.
Yes.
He's been way, way, way more solid.
And
consistent. He's not chasing the ball as much.
Nope.
He's being a better professional hitter.
Everybody in the starting lineup had a hit last night.
Yeah,
you know, it was really good to see. They got a nice opening from I won't call it a start. I'll call it an opening from Okert, and then Blueball came in shortly thereafter and pitched a few good innings. Here was Joe Espada on the bullpen bringing this thing to the shore.
Yeah, it Okert went out and gave us one of six outs. He gave us a good five outs and. Ort came in, did a nice job, and then Blueball came out of the pen, up to 98. Breaking balls were effective. He attacked the zone. It's exactly what we needed out of him. But he looked really, really good, confident. Ball was coming out hot.
That's 98-mile-an-hour fastball that Blueball threw. It's like the biggest story of the game.
They did. I'll credit Espada with just simplifying the game plan for him. Yeah. Blueball is a six-pitch guy. But they reduced it down to his fastball, his sweeper, and his changeup, and he could just kind of focus on executing pitches. It was a smart thing to do with a young guy in his second appearance. People don't have a book on him yet, and he could just go out there and kind of blow people away with his speed. That was a nice, pleasant surprise.
I said 4:40 earlier. That's the time we're in where the Astros are starting. 3:40 back in Houston. The game starts. Today. Oh, okay. It's an afternoon game.
Sorry, everybody. You guys are going to have to operate on East Coast time now.
You're going to have to live on Eastern time for the next 2 days.
Is it like we're listing sitcom times.
That's right. That's right. Spencer Arrighetti returns for the Astros today. Hey, quick note in the sports business world, the NFL and ESPN completed that deal that they've been talking about for a long time. We could talk about it more a little later maybe. But ESPN is acquiring the NFL Network,
yeah.
Red Zone, NFL Fantasy, and in return, the NFL is getting a 10% stake in ESPN. Which I'm sure will not affect reporting at all. That was the big reaction.
I know. That was
last night.
We're already
in this world.
The state of sports reporting and journalism, and how journalism has just been chopped down at the knees in so many regards when it comes to sports.
That was the funny part. Everybody is like this is the thing now. Have you been looking around for the last 10 years?
I feel bad. I mean, it's kind of Jonathan Alexander is still a journalist, and he tries to conduct himself in a certain way and operate a certain way for the Chronicle. And he's at a disadvantage because of it.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't do some of the things that other guys do.
Yep.
And this will just be more of that, I suppose. He's competing with people that just have free reign to be insiders.
Quick mention too, ESPN doing a deal with WWE whereas WWE's all their premium live events are carried on Peacock, moving over to ESPN for $325 million a year.
Boy, that's a
WrestleMania is going to be on ESPN. The E does stand for entertainment, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
What's funny is I see a lot of people understandably and accurately saying, wow, boy, this is an indication of where ESPN is right now. What the hell? I miss the old ESPN. No, this is the old ESPN.
Yeah.
They were in the early days of ESPN.
Oh, dude,
it was anything and everything.
Australian rules football.
Oh, you're looking for caber toss action? You go to ESPN.
I don't even know what that is, but yes.
That was a Scottish Highland Games.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
This is a lot more this is just a higher budget version of the initial ESPN, the very early days of ESPN.
All right, coming up next, those are your headlines. Coming up next, C.J. Stroud sat down right out here, right in these very chairs yesterday with Evan Washburn from CBS. Evan Washburn is the sideline reporter on what is going to be the J.J. Watt crew on CBS this year. He's J.J. Watt's
Evan sideline. Washburn is the guy that whenever he's around a training camp or a practice or a game, you're like, oh, that guy's on television.
Yeah, he's somebody.
Without knowing that he's on television, you're like, all right, that guy, I don't even know if he's any good, but he's definitely got to be on television.
He sat down with C.J. Stroud yesterday. I thought it was an interesting answer C.J. had when he was asked, how do you view last season? We'll have that for you from the Texans quarterback coming up next.